This week takes us to Pollock, Texas, where a young girl who was ready to speak out against her abusers is violently silenced forever. This is episode 71 of Texas 1031. Hey everyone, this is Hannah. This is Texas 1031, and this is a Texas true crime podcast. A listener who wanted to remain anonymous suggested this case, so thank you for your request. I haven't said this in forever, but rate and review the podcast. We have been sitting at like 186 reviews for a while, and that's just dumb. I know you are listening, but go show me that you are listening, okay? Thank you. So picture it, Pollock, Texas, 2003. The same year Candace Alexander died, Angelina County had been considered the meth capital of Texas. Just like many areas across the country, East Texas was being decimated by addiction. Texas Monthly released an article in 2004 citing that between 1999 and 2004, the Deep East Texas Regional Narcotics Trafficking Task Force tracked down more than 350 meth labs in just the Piney Woods alone. Drug overdoses were unfortunately commonplace, and someone in the Angelina County area was dying close to every week from meth use. So when Candace, who first used meth at the young age of 12, was found dead underneath a trashed-out truck in the front yard of her home, law enforcement and the community weren't necessarily surprised. However, it would take 2 years for the truth to be made public about the death of 15-year-old Candace Alexander. It was originally believed that Candace had died from a drug overdose. However, Sergeant David Campbell, a seasoned investigator with the Lufkin Police Department, would dedicate years of his life to get justice for Candace and prove that the young girl wasn't just another statistic in her town. Rather, she was brutally tortured and murdered. Candy, as she was known by friends and family, was born on October 6, 1987. A year prior, in 1986, Candace's older brother Cody was taken from his mother, Rebecca, as an infant by Child Protective Services. A bone scan at a local hospital revealed fractures to the ulna and radius of his right arm, the tibia and femur of both legs, and multiple rib fractures in varying stages of healing. He was also blind. Nearly 6 months old, Cody weighed only 9 pounds. It was established very early on that Rebecca, Candace's mother, and Kester, Candace's father, were avid drug users. Rebecca would go on to have 2 more daughters, Amanda and Tiffany, but would eventually leave the marriage with Kester. The young mom would move from place to place with her kids, staying in a multitude of trailer parks and on couches of friends and family members. By 2000, the family had settled down somewhat. Rebecca and her girls lived in the same trailer park as their grandmother, the girls were actually attending school regularly, and Rebecca had a steady job at the local Golden Corral. However, things dramatically changed when Rebecca met a man named Johnny Lee. Longtime drug cooker and seller, Johnny had a fairly long rap sheet as a convicted felon. Johnny was the one who provided crystal meth to Candace when she was only 12 years old. He had also done the same thing to Candace's sister, Amanda. Johnny Lee wasn't just a scary, drug-fueled shitbag. No, he was far worse. Johnny was a violent sexual predator. Not long after Johnny Lee came into the lives of the Alexander girls and married Rebecca, the sexual abuse began. Soon after Johnny and Rebecca got together, they picked up stakes and moved the family to one place after another, a cycle the girls had unfortunately gotten used to. They became familiarized with derelict homes, places with no electricity or running water, which were covered in just pure filth. Strangers wandered in and out of their home daily to buy meth and get high. These young children were exposed to extreme danger every day, not only in the destitution and proximity to addicts, but simply in the fact that Johnny was cooking crystal meth daily in their various homes, which as most of us know, is very dangerous and a very risky process. Because of all of this, Candace was ashamed and embarrassed of her family. She kept her home life a secret from her closest friends, and she never allowed them to meet Rebecca or Johnny, let alone let them come over to her house. At some point, when the abuse reached a new high, Candace actually confided in a friend about what she and her sisters were dealing with at home. In turn, this friend consulted a teacher at school. Unfortunately, this teacher didn't go to law enforcement or CPS. Rather, they contacted Candace's mother, Rebecca, which in hindsight was most certainly the incorrect decision. You see, Rebecca wasn't like most mothers. We already established she was to blame for the abuse of her son, Cody, but her disdain for her girls was different, but ran just as deep. Most of us have probably heard of the category of woman that blames their daughter for trying to steal their husband or their boyfriend if the husband or boyfriend sexually assaults their daughter. This type of woman is Rebecca, and her addiction and loyalty to Johnny always surpassed her love for her daughters. I'll give you an example. Candace's older sister Amanda was kicked out of the family's home when she was 14 after Rebecca walked in on Johnny having sex with Amanda. She was forced to go live with several other local addicts in another home in the area. This is shocking, but not all that surprising. So at this current point in time, it was just Candace and Tiffany at the trailer home in Pollock. It has never been documented if Johnny abused Tiffany, but I would say it's a high possibility. In retaliation for telling her friend about the physical and sexual abuse, Rebecca removed Candace from that school and enrolled her in another. From there on out, Candace kept her mouth shut and never spoke of her abuse to anyone else ever again. Rather, Candace turned to music and writing poetry as an emotional outlet. Candace hated her stepfather and mother, but she adored her youngest sister, Tiffany. The two were incredibly close and took care of one another. The abuse that was occurring in the home was debilitating, and the girls wanted to escape their parents as often as possible and tried to avoid staying at home if they could help it. Not long before her death, Candace would tell her friends that she knew she was going to die soon. Candace had expressed thoughts of suicide to her friends and her little sister, but they would just brush it off or get frustrated with her and figured it was just a typical statement made by a hormonal teenage girl who just couldn't express herself in a healthy way. Little did they know, Candace would be right. On May 9th, 2003, Candace would be found deceased at her home in Pollock, Texas, just 12 miles north of Lufkin. Again, it was believed she had died from an overdose. Just a few months later, in September, Detective David Campbell had been assigned to the local ATF's Project Safe Neighborhood Task Force. This task force was designed to group multiple departments, agencies, and jurisdictions together and have them focus in on the major crimes that plagued their community, along with prevention and deterrence efforts. At the time, Detective Campbell was the sergeant for the Lufkin PD's Criminal Investigation Division, and he was wrapping up a meeting with the many others from the Project Safe Neighborhoods Task Force when one of the men in the group suggested that they needed to look into the case of Candace Alexander. One of the men said, "You know, there's no way someone can inject themselves with enough meth to kill themselves. They would most certainly need help. You might pass out if you did it yourself, but you would need another person to keep injecting you to actually kill you." This immediately piqued Detective Campbell's interest. He was somewhat familiar with the case, primarily with the people involved, meaning Rebecca and Johnny Lee. He was able to get a hold of the case file for Candace's death. This included the usual items, a statement from Johnny Lee, crime scene photos, and autopsy photos. Johnny's statement was that he went out to crank his truck around 6:30 a.m. to take the girls to school. Upon doing so, he found Candace underneath the truck, dead. He proceeded to pull her out and carried into the house where Rebecca then called 911. There was no formal interview or statement taken from Rebecca. To Detective Campbell, the crime scene photos were as expected of a traditional meth house. Cluttered, dirty, and trashed. The outside was just as bad as the inside. The only organized area was a small corner in the kitchen reserved for meth cooking supplies like Pyrex dishes and coffee filters. Nothing substantial was noted. The autopsy photos, however, told a different story and caught Detective Campbell's attention. It was very apparent to him that Candace didn't die from a drug overdose. Candace was covered in car grease, pine needles, and dirt. She had fingernail indentation marks on her face like she had been held down by her head. There were marks and bruises extending the length of her right arm from being struck multiple times with a hard, round, elongated object. There was a large abrasion on her nose and blood in her right nostril, both haunting remnants of being struck in the face. There were bright red abrasions on her hips, which later proved that she was pulled away from the car by the back of her belt. There was also a prominent linear bruise on her abdomen, which turned out to be an imprint of the inseam and zipper of her pants, along with grass found in her pubic area, all of which emphasized that she was yanked and pulled by the back of her pants out from under the truck. The evidence showed that Candace had suffered through a horrendous beating and attack before her 5'3", 90-pound body was forcefully injected with enough methamphetamine to kill four 150-pound men. Additional photos after her body had been cleaned during autopsy showed a single injection site on her arm that was surrounded by bruising in the exact shape of four fingers and one thumb. How the coroner or medical examiner could sign off on this autopsy stating that her cause of death was a drug overdose is interesting, to say the least. I realize the blood test showed excessive amounts of meth, but I still think you can't deny the physical remnants of an attack, and I think that this was a missed opportunity early on. After reviewing all of the evidence, Detective Campbell took his theory to the Lufkin police chief. In response, the chief told him to get the FBI and the Texas Rangers on board, and he could proceed with his investigation. And proceed he did. For the next 2 years, the murder of Candace Alexander consumed Detective Campbell's life. The first step was to find Johnny Lee, arrest him, and make sure he couldn't persuade or intimidate any witnesses or informants that could help in the investigation. Finding him was actually pretty easy. Johnny was actually arrested on a parole violation warrant for being in the possession of essentially controlled substance supplies, aka meth supplies, and in possession of a firearm. This warrant was actually written up the day after Candace was located dead at the home when a sheriff's department officer found the meth supplies and pistol in a cooler Johnny had hidden out in the woods. Again, the warrant was successfully written up back in 2003, but it was never entered into NCIC or properly filed. So, with warrant in hand, they arrested Johnny Lee. Better late than never, I guess. The next step was to hone in on Rebecca, since nobody had bothered to up to this point, and with Johnny out of the way, Detective Campbell had the flexibility to do so without much interference. Detective Campbell interviewed her 3 times. Each time, Rebecca had a new story and different versions of events. All of the interviews were filled with rants and angry accusations and conspiracy theories about what happened to Candace. She pointed the finger at the sheriff and Candace's cousin. She claimed a number of people were guilty of Candace's death, except her husband, Johnny Lee. This didn't really bother Detective Campbell, though. For months, undercover narcotics officers had been poking and prodding Rebecca about Candace's death, all unbeknownst to her. And these officers were reporting back to Detective Campbell and their superiors. The end game was to get Rebecca so entwined in her own story that she couldn't crawl out of it. And most importantly, they wanted to have her talking and fucking up on camera. Investigators found Rebecca hiding out at her ex-husband, Kester's home. When the officers pulled up to the house, they saw 4 young girls between the ages of 2 and 7 sitting out in the front yard with just panties on, digging out wild onion from the grass to eat. While the home did have electricity, there was no running water and no food. Only beer was in the refrigerator. The 4 young girls were taken into CPS custody and adopted out to a family in Nacogdoches. Both Johnny and Rebecca were later indicted on murder charges in July of 2004. With the two behind bars, Detective Campbell was even more free to continue on with his investigation and to speak to more people within the Lee's circle. Many of these people were unreliable due to drug use, and others just led investigators down crazy rabbit holes with even crazier leads. but they knew they had to run each lead down just in case. One of these one-off leads was Elton Reese. Elton was extradited from Virginia back to Texas and was also charged with murder. However, Elton wouldn't talk to Detective Campbell or any other officer for nearly 7 months, until one day he decided to spill the story that would finally link all of the information and evidence in Candace's case together, sealing the fate of Johnny and Rebecca Lee. The trial against Candace's mother and stepfather lasted a little over a week. The prosecution proudly paraded in their numerous witnesses who explained, piece by piece, filling in the gaps of what happened to Candace Alexander. The most crucial witness testimony was that of Elton Reese. As he took the stand, Elton recalled what occurred in the early morning hours of May 9th, 2003. According to Elton, he had made his way to Johnny's house that day because Johnny was going to be making a fresh batch of crystal meth, and he wanted to buy some and get high. When he arrived the first time, the batch hadn't quite finished, and Johnny needed a few more hours, but told Elton to return and he'd get him sorted. Elton was hurting in a bad way and was desperate, but he knew he just needed to wait a little bit longer and come back to the Lee's house. Upon showing up the second time, he told the jury he was inside the trailer waiting in the living room when he heard indiscernible arguing and yelling coming from one of the bedrooms. All of a sudden, he sees Candace racing out of the bedroom, her face stricken with panic, with Johnny and Rebecca chasing behind her. Elton watched from the front door of the trailer as Candace dove underneath a pickup truck parked outside the front of the house, but just a few seconds later saw her kicking and screaming, being dragged by her hips out from under the truck by Johnny. This is where the grass found in her pubic area came from, as well as the motor oil and grease and dirt, because Candace had actually been holding on to the drive shaft of the truck and was pulled across the dirt yard back inside the home. It was later determined that the bruising, scratches, and lacerations primarily came from a horse bridle Rebecca had used to beat her daughter with during the fight. Elton then stated that the couple came back in the home, forcefully shoving Candace back into the bedroom they had just come from. He said that for a few moments he heard more fighting from the trio, but then, pure silence. He watched as Johnny and Rebecca emerged from the room, seemingly ignoring Elton's presence, yelling at one another, "I told you that was too much." After the couple wandered into another bedroom in the trailer, Elton became curious and walked into the room the two had just exited. Many years prior, before addiction took over his life, Elton had actually been a paramedic with the local fire department. Immediately upon seeing Candace, Elton knew she was gone. Witnessing this was too much for Elton, and he ran from the home without ever speaking to Johnny or Rebecca. In exchange for his testimony, the murder charges against Elton Reese were dropped. Elton died of cancer about a year later. Further testimony provided by other witnesses told the jury that by the time first responders arrived at the Lee's residence, livor mortis had set in and lividity was incredibly apparent. Imprints of Candace's jewelry were left indented on her skin, next to a rose tattoo that Johnny had actually given to each Candace, Amanda, and Rebecca. The crime scene photos and autopsy photos of Candace's remains would prove that Rebecca had waited a number of hours before calling 911. Prosecutors believed that based on Elton's testimony, Rebecca and Johnny left Candace in the bedroom while they cleaned themselves up and removed any signs of a meth lab in their home. They even made Candace's younger sister, Tiffany, help clean up the house. She witnessed her dead sister being moved from a chair and to the floor like a limp doll. And for the next few hours, Tiffany, Rebecca, and Johnny had to step over and around Candace's body while they cleaned up the house. The prosecution didn't just want to explain the where, the how, and the who involved in Candace's murder. They also wanted to explain the why. Obviously, drugs along with sexual and physical abuse were to blame, but because of these factors, Candace had extreme mental health struggles and was currently going back and forth between Rebecca's house and her biological father, Kester's house. Candace was depressed and suicidal, and she wanted out. It is believed that a family friend overheard Candace on the night of May 9th, stating that she was going to tell everyone what was happening inside the home. The drugs, the sexual assault, everything. Another source reports that Rebecca knew Johnny was sexually attracted to her daughters. She knew this after witnessing him raping Amanda. After this incident, however, Rebecca decided that she didn't mind if he raped and molested Candace, as long as she was also present. But one day, Johnny took Candace fishing without inviting Rebecca. When Rebecca found out they had had sex on the trip, she went berserk, and for the next 10 days, Candace was violently beaten before finally being killed on May 9th. Regardless, on November 1st, 2005, the jury found both Johnny and Rebecca guilty on all charges, and it took the jury only 2 hours to sentence them to life in prison. Neither of them showed much, if any, emotion during the course of the trial or sentencing. Rebecca Lee is currently at the Murray Unit in Gatesville, and she is available for parole in 2034. Johnny Lee is currently at the Wynn Unit in Huntsville, and he is also available for parole in 2034. Candace's headstone at Berry Cemetery, east of Lufkin, reads Candy, and in loving memory of our beautiful sister and loving daughter. The stone was bought with community donations from police, probation officers, child advocates, and local business owners. Detective Campbell was asked what, if any, good has come from Candace's murder, and his response is that those four little girls that were seen practically naked in the front yard eating wild onions were saved from a similar life and future, and to him, that is enough. He is currently working on a book about the case as well. And that is the tragic murder of Candace Alexander. Questions and theories, I guess. I don't really know. This case bummed me out more than I thought it would, and it kind of pissed me off because it's just, I don't know. How was this allowed to go on this long? How was there no interference in the family's life and personal business? How did these sisters not get rescued sooner? How was Rebecca able to make three other fucking children after Cody? That's just so upsetting. And I know that reports state that Rebecca had her own traumas and Johnny was controlling her. He was like almost 20 years older than she was. So there was some sort of relationship dynamic, you know, in concert with the drug addiction. But like, this is going to maybe piss some people off, but she should have been fucking sterilized. They both honestly should have just been executed. But that's just my opinion. I think Candace's death was completely preventable. Cody, Amanda, Tiffany, and Candace's abuse was completely preventable. Somebody should have stepped in and done something, but they didn't. They were so focused on their own addiction to give a fuck, or they weren't addicts, but they just didn't know what to do or to say. But like, these girls were malnourished and underweight. They were dirty. They missed school constantly. Apparently no one cared. Kester struggled with drugs and died in 2019. Obviously, Candace is dead due to drugs and abuse. And even Tiffany just died in 2022 due to drugs. Addiction is one of the worst diseases on the planet. And getting help, obviously, is easier said than done. And unfortunately, children fall through the cracks and people get ignored. And the disease is cyclical. I hate that Candace had to die the way that she did, but I am certainly glad she has been removed from that life and that home for good, and she doesn't have to suffer anymore. I hope you guys enjoyed this fucking awful episode, and I will be back with more Texas true crime. So if anyone is listening, happy Halloween.